we are 6 minutes behind time. I hope everyone has a copy of the program. In case you don't, it apologizes yourself, it's just raise your hand. Fine if we all have a copy of the program. Director General Kate, we welcome you and your team, as well as the can you please come in, comrades? We're waiting on you to start. Professor Emwaila, the DG of Traditional Affairs, we welcome you to this meeting, and of course the Auditor General's Office, by way of starting, would allow you and your team to introduce yourselves, the Auditor General's Office, and then members of Parliament. And once we have dispensed all those formalities, then we can begin our process of engagement. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and morning to members of COPA. My name is Dumin Chetty. I'm serving in the capacity of Acting DG, Department of Cooperative Governance. In terms of full-time work, I work for Department of Traditional Affairs under DG Waila as the Deputy Director General, responsible for institutional support and coordination. Thank you.
Honorable members, Chairperson, I'm Charles Waila. I'm the Director General of Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Mawetu Mchuda. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Nontlantla Khumalo. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee for the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Genelo Lydia Sebevo. I'm the Chief Operations Officer for the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Mohanwa Mabidilala. I'm standing in for the head of the National Disaster Management Center. My normal functions are I'm doing intervention and response in disaster management.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Joseph Tisho. I'm the executive manager, technical support unit, DECOC.
Good morning, honorable members and the Chairperson. My name is Temba Fosi. I'm the deputy director general, responsible for policy research and knowledge management.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Ricardo Hansby, DDG for Infrastructure and Economic Development. Thank you.
Good Good morning. My name is Shanaz Majid. I'm the Deputy Director General for responsible for provincial and municipal government support. I joined COTSA on the 1st of December last year. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Chair Mukwena from the Office of the Minister. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Lerato Twane. I'm from COTSA Finance.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Siyabulela Molefe from the Office of the Chief Operations Officer responsible for corporate planning and governance.
Right, thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Lawrence Van Fee and I'm the Business Executive and the Auditor General responsible for, amongst others, this corporate portfolio.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members and colleagues. My name is Andrei Sekheto from the Office of the Auditor General. I'm the Engagement Manager responsible for the Audit of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs.
All right, can we allow members of Parliament to introduce themselves? We'll start then, KZN. I hope members introduce themselves slowly. Don't be as fast as the officials, otherwise they will not even remember your name by the time you finish.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Naren Singh, singer song from KwaZulu and a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Chief Dion George, and I'm a member of this committee.
Chair, my name is Pierre Robbie and I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Saramani, I'm a member of this committee.
Faith Mutambi, I'm a member of this committee.
Roy Ainsley, a member of this committee from KwaZulu-Natal.
Kaela Mdila Stilo, in Alaka Kenas Lamrawa to be here.
Thank you. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. Right. I understand that the minister is delayed. That's my understanding, and he will probably join us in due course. Right, acting DG and DG Mwaila. We have requested this interaction as COPA. I want to call it interaction and not all the other horrible things that people try to make it to be. This interaction so that together with you we could go through some of the aspects of the annual report, especially those that deal with the finances. As you know, our key responsibility is this review of government expenditure. So how the Auditor General has reported on your finances and how you have reported on them, and those are the key areas around which we will be seeking, you know, interaction on with you. Let me emphasize right from the beginning that this is a very simple exercise of exchange of information. So all we're asking, because what we're trying to do is to check what exactly killed the patient. So it has happened. We can't change it. So there's no need to put it any different from what it is. And if that were to be the cause, I can assure you we would have an early day today. the temptation might be there to give background, and I think that might not be very, very necessary. Let's just be pointed so that we're able to cover as much ground as possible. By the time we finish here, we'll be satisfied that we have done all that is necessary to get things, you know, clarified. We cannot overemphasize the importance of the department. I remember at its inception, in its new form, COCTA. It was like it is a cog that, you know, gets the country going. But I see we had Public Works yesterday saying South Africa works because it's Public Works. But the importance of the department cannot be overemphasized. It deals with traditional leadership, which takes care of you know, the rural areas, deals with coordinating municipalities. I remember the previous minister used to say, even provinces, the leadership of provinces is supposed to interact with this department in a very, very significant way. So provinces, municipalities, traditional leaders, this department has a responsibility over them. So whatever happens in this department cannot be less significant. And right at the beginning, the department put a timeline that is in the minds of all of us, 2014. So, as we edge towards 2014, led by the department, it has to run itself and do things in a way that it remains that shining example of how things need to be done. So if we get a sense that maybe there is some disjunction between the ideal and what is happening, I think that is what becomes the source of concern for us as a committee in the first instance, and Parliament generally. So it is these areas that we would want to go through and have an appreciation of what it is that happened that created conditions for some of the steps to occur. Because unless we know what it is that led to where we are, we might as well repeat it in future. And we don't want, you know, what Lenin calls one step forward, two steps back. No one consistent, one forward. So I think that is the background for us. And I think, and it's a pity that I see Professor Mwaila is here, who signed off this report on the 31st of August. But Mr. Elroy Africa is unfortunately not here anymore. And it is a challenge that does not only affect your department, but even yesterday we faced a similar situation. You know, the acting DG has only been in the office for 2 weeks. So but we appreciate that accountability is institutional and not personal. But at the same time, you can't divorce the personal from the institutional, because it's individuals who create the institution. So I don't even want to say she was in traditional affairs, not even in the cooperative governance section of the total department. So I think, comrades, as we engage, let's get that at the forefront.
Why is Mr. Africa not here? Is it possible to furnish us with a reason for the committee? Has it been suspended too?
Well, my understanding is that he has left the department. He's not suspended, he has left the department. So,
I want to make a follow-up on what you are asking. I'm a little bit worried when really we come here and find new people. Because the only person who was supposed to come and tell us what actually happened, why this person died, is Mr. Africa. Before we can come with our scouts and other things to open up the corpse and see really what killed it. He's the one who should have been here now. Maybe in the future we should ask these people to come and help us. Because we are going to attack these people, and they are new. They don't even understand what is it. Okay, I know they can answer the questions, but somewhere they are going to get stuck.
Right. Can we maybe talk a little more focused on this issue in one of our plenary sessions, so that we agree in terms of how we deal with it, so that we spare ourselves the just to indicate that we once had a similar situation where an official from the land bank had left, but the official was more than willing to come and explain things, but the then minister was saying no, we can't. Who is representing is no longer in the department. You have called the department, we're here. So, but I'm just saying there's the other side, but let's talk to it, the competent, and see how we resolve it. Not here, but some other time. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with you that we do need to have this conversation and at another time. However, it's the same question as I asked yesterday. I want to know from the department, now that they've introduced themselves, who actually is accountable? Because yesterday I asked the question and then somebody indicated that they were responsible and then said they'd only been there for 2 months or something. So who actually accepts responsibility? Although the financials aren't as awful as the ones yesterday, but who actually is taking responsibility for the purposes of today? Maybe that's the question, because I'm not sure. Thank you, Chair.
I also want to check whether we've got an apology from both the Minister and the Deputy Minister.
Yeah, I think the Minister will join us later. He's in a meeting elsewhere. Dr. George, the DG of the department leads a delegation of officials that come here. So whoever comes as the Director General, acting or permanent, is the person who gives accountability in terms of what has transpired. Because the PFMA has stipulated the responsibilities of the DG as well as the minister. That is why we emphasize the importance of the presence of the political leadership. Because after all, accountability to parliament is political and not administrative. So, yes, Ms. Mukheti here is the one who will be responding to all the queries that you will be raising. All right, Comrade Roy, and then we get started.
Now, unfortunately, it is the acting DG. Whether that person has been here even 1 hour must take responsibility and must come and account. But sometimes that is impractical. You know, you can hardly expect the person who's been in the job for a few weeks to account fully for the department receiving a qualification. Maybe in future, when we do our invitation list, we must determine who it is that can come and really account. Whether that person person is still in the department or not, and then before this meeting determine whether we can in fact invite the relevant person to honestly care answer whether they're in that position any longer or not. Perhaps we can have that discussion not now, but at perhaps our next portfolio committee meeting. But it is important, I think, to get people here who are not only in the position which expects them to answer, but also practically can do so.
Can we finally make progress? Push.
Thanks, Chairperson. I want us to understand that we are dealing with a kind of a department that I'm sure in a long time we have never seen. We are seeing two people who are accounting officers. I'm not even sure how are we then going to expect their response. Will their response come from each of them at a particular time when they're supposed to? Or there will be one, because in terms of the organogram, there's no one who is superior to one another amongst themselves. So how do we deal with that particular situation, Chair? I thought it's very important for us to understand how do we expect to respond, because Professor Noila has been with the department in the period of this particular financial year that we're going to deal with, and the other acting, I'm not sure how do we then understand that.
I think the matter was clarified during the briefing session with the Auditor General. Ms. Kate is the one who will be first and foremost be taking responsibility. The corporate governance part of the department is the main department. That's where the CFO and corporate services are located. Whereas the COPTA part, but I'm sure that if there are specific issues that might have arisen from the expenditure of traditional affairs, I'm sure they will be able to know and refer to Professor Mwaina. And equally, if he has answers like all other officials who are here, they will be able to make inputs. But the person who is here leading the delegation is Ms. Kate. Right, can we move, comrades? I think the message that we're sending to this world is that there's something very wrong with government. That needs to be fixed. This short-termism and this instability in the leadership of departments does not assist. You can't build an institution on short-termism, especially if we assume that from 94 we're building new institutions. It takes time to build institutions, and you don't build them with people who have 4-year contracts, 3-year contracts, because the person will be there for 2 years, the next 2 years thinking about where am I going next. So if government, you are listening, we this is not it. It can't be it. But anyway, Memanya, can we hand over to you to kickstart our corporate engagement with the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs? And let's not think of yesterday. So treat the department as it is. Don't think of yesterday and say, well, this is better than yesterday. Not a continuum. We finished yesterday, we're starting today.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at the audit report that was given to us by the AG's office. In 2007-2008, the department
had an unqualified with other matters. In 2008, 2009, it went down, it was qualified. 2009, 2010, it went up again, unqualified. Last year, up to this year, 2010 to 2011, it went down again. And I was sitting and thinking that maybe when we talk to the department, and then they go back, they start working, saying that last year we didn't do well, but this time really we must just pull up our socks, and they do that. Well, I would like to say, when they live here, they go and pull up their socks, but they must pull up higher and higher and higher as if it's pantyhose. You know, with the pantyhose, you start at the toes until you put it at the waist. That's what they should do. Then they have done a good job. The Auditor General discovered that there were irregular expenditure. That was his basis for qualified opinion. But what worries me is that the AG was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to the completeness of irregular expenditure of about 419.5 million. What I wanted to find out from the department, why has the department not developed systems for irregular expenditure? Because I know if the systems are there, it's easy to detect that at an earlier age. Does the department have those systems?
Yeah, can we get a response to that question? We will take one question at a time.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson, and thanks the Honourable Member for the question. We had prepared, Chairperson, the presentation based on the post-audit process. We had hoped that we would take the members through it, and then...
It works differently in this committee.
Okay.
So I said we were doing a post-mortem. We're looking back at what killed the patient, what the prescription is for those who are still alive. That is the responsibility of the portfolio committee. So you tell them, this is what we're planning to do. So we look at the end of the financial year, whether you actually did what you committed yourself to doing. And if you didn't, why did you not do it? So the question is, do you have systems to detect irregular expenditure? If not, why were those systems not there?
Okay, thank you. Since the finding of the Auditor General and the issuing of the report, the department developed a post-audit action plan. The action plan's focus was mainly to review some of the financial systems that were in place at the time, and to develop a detailed action plan that will enable the department to respond to the issues that were identified as matters of concern in the actual audit outcome. And I'm going to request that the committee allows that. I request the CFO's office just to take the members through some of the interventions and systems that.
But it's not responding to the question, why were those systems not there before the Auditor General came? Because the PFMA is clear. The PFMA was there in 2011, 2010, 2009, 2008, going way back. Why were those systems not there? Why did we have systems that were not up to scratch? That's the question.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I should just go back and indicate that there was a time in the department where the department went through a restructuring process, and that led to a large number of senior managers, specifically in finance, leaving the department. The CFO, who was at the DGG level, left the department during 2009, early in 2009. And the other problem is that some of the senior officials in the department were shifted as a result of the restructuring exercise.
and we ended up with one senior manager at the director level, who was then appointed to act as a CFO. We had a situation where a director was acting in the position of a DDD, which was the level of the CFO position at the time. And below that person, we didn't have any other senior managers with the necessary skill to support. That led to the collapse of systems at the time, until such time that the department was in a position to fill posts. A process in itself was very slow towards the filling of posts. Most of the officials in finance that are present in the meeting today joined the department last year. The CFO joined the department towards the end of the financial year in February last year, and the deputy came in late towards the end of the year. So the process.
I think you see that's the response that we needed. Help us to understand what was the state of affairs that led to the situation. Right.
I'm saying that at the moment they are busy trying to make sure that those systems are going to be there and they will be controlled. And then the next one is, how many cases of irregular expenditure have been identified? How many cases? And was there any legal?
Thanks, Honourable Member. I'm going to request that the CFO assist with that.
Thanks, to respond directly to the question, and that answer will be linked to the work that we have done since the voting process was finalized to the 1st July this year. And in terms of the exercise that we're doing now is that the 419 irregular expenditure that was reported but not complete is under investigation by our own internal audit unit. The cases that we're dealing here per transaction, this is around about 200 transactions that actually happened within the department, but the major part of the 419 is made up of extensions of contracts, mainly two that make up about 90% of this irregular expenditure, that were extended beyond the 15% limit required by the national transfer provisions. And there were reasons why these contracts, though we were not happy with that, but they were extended, and basically reasons why they were extended. But the majority of cases are mainly the cases that involve the non-compliance with supply chain management involving the procurement of goods up to 30,000, where we are expected to attach a certain number of quotations. And in many cases, people, and it's linked to what the accounting officer was saying, I don't think when people are displaced and the culture of non-adherence to policies developed, the policies were there, the systems were there before, but people during this period, though they were displaced, but they were given some responsibility.
Can I just check maybe before you continue? I mean, this period, it's like you're in a period of madness. You're in your own Chinese cultural revolution. What was happening? I mean, who was shifting people around? Why were people shifted around? You have an institution, it's stable, it has system, it has personnel, and then you shift them around. What was happening? Why were people shifted around?
The department was restructured towards the end of 2009 by the previous minister. And what happened is that all senior managers from director to DDG level were set to be displaced. That's the term that was used. We all received letters indicating that people are displaced.
What did that mean?
Displaced meant at the time that you don't have a position and a particular function that you are performing at the time. And around March last year, all posts, senior management posts, were advertised, all of them at a time, in the newspapers. The filling of those vacancies
started around June, July last year. And the first people that were appointed assumed their new responsibilities from 1st of August 2011. The only position that was effective at the time was the position of the Director General, and it was occupied by my predecessor when he was still a DDG, but serving in the acting capacity. But he was appointed earlier. The other problem is that because there was a lull, there were no senior managers available. The process towards the filling of vacancies took longer. You couldn't establish interview panels and committees to fast track the filling of vacancy process. So it took longer than originally anticipated. Hence, most of the executives sitting here started mid last year because of that slow pace. And that's really the root cause.
Well, I think let's continue. Just that I wanted us to have a sense of what was happening. It's a pity the minister is not here, but it would be interesting because as the then Minister of Public Service and Administration, it might have been interesting to find out from him how it was possible that an entire department would be suspended, people would be displaced. What was the reason? We understand why Mao had the Cultural Revolution in China. It was an ideological question. But in this particular instance, what was this madness all about? But anyway, it's fine. So we have a sense. It's like it was deconstructed to be reconstructed.
Who's doing that in the department? Because according to my knowledge, from February last year, the Honorable Minister was not in the department, and actually who was doing those reshuffling, moving people from their positions, others not even given positions, who was doing that? Because by that time, the minister was not coming to work. I know it very well, I'm really clear about it. Who was doing that? The DG?
In a meeting that was called in February last year, the 12th of February last year, the announcement about the displacement of senior managers was communicated by the DG and the advisor to the minister at the time.
Right, let's continue
okay.
with our agenda.
Okay. There were monies that were supposed to go to municipalities. But those monies ended up in wrong accounts. What the department do about it? How were they recovered? And who was responsible for banking those monies in those wrong accounts?
Thanks, Honorable Member. Again, with your indulgence, I'll request the CFO to assist.
Thanks, Chairperson. If I may deal with the first one, the 127 million is money that was transferred to a municipality that was not transferred on the date that was agreed upon between the municipality, the department, and treasurer. What actually happened in this particular case is that on the day we were supposed to transfer the money, there were some hiccups within the department. And we wrote to treasurer to ask them to approve an amended payment schedule.
Don't say the hiccups, just say this happened. If you say hiccup, we don't know what that means. Just state what happened.
Okay, the department was not ready to make the transfer payment on the due date that was on the payment schedule. Then on the basis of that, we wrote to treasurer on the same day. And the treasurer responded by saying it's not within them to actually, because they're also doing exactly what you are talking about here, that it's our responsibility as a department that we caused this delay. We, however,
was I wrong in saying it is of your own making?
Yeah.
Were they wrong?
No, they were not wrong.
we accept that, but what we interpreted wrong is I say, however, make the transfer payment. It was already late. Then we made the transfer payment at the day after the due date. And when the AG came, they discovered that, and the conclusion was that the transfer payment was made in non-compliance with the donor. And we accept that. But what we did in pursuance of that with Treasury is that we confirmed with the particular municipalities whether they did receive the money and they used it for what it was meant for, and that confirmation was received from the respective municipality. Not matter is now with Treasury to ask them to condone this irregular expenditure. The second one, that is the 18 million, this one is about the primary bank account. At the beginning of the financial year, the municipalities provide us, together with Treasury, with the bank accounts that they are going to use in that particular financial year for us to deposit money into their accounts. And we do have the payment schedule I spoke about. We start processing payments, not only duty, before that, because there are so many. And we did this in this particular case. And on the day we were supposed to press the button to transfer, a letter was received from Treasury amending the primary bank accounts of particular municipalities, saying don't turn them here. And because the correspondence from Treasury goes to DG and gets transmitted to ourselves as officials, it took time, and by that I've already processed the payments to these wrong accounts that were amended already by Treasury. The money went to municipalities, and again in this particular case, we requested municipalities to confirm whether the money was actually received or the bank account working, it was still there, and they confirmed in writing that they did receive the money, and the money was used for what it was transferred for, and the matter, that matter again is with Treasury for condonation. This matter was also discussed with the AG, and we accept the finding. And we are doing something about it so that we prevent the occurrence of that in the future. Yes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Listen, I do understand what he's saying. My only problem is that if they had assistance in the department, they would have realized that what they've done is wrong. They wouldn't even have gone to the to Treasury to ask for approval or whatever. They would have just seen that, no, here we've made a mistake. But since they don't have that, they couldn't just see that the money has gone into wrong banking account.
Maybe Mange, let's get from the AG, because I have sympathy with their explanation, but maybe it's just one side of the explanation. Can we be enlightened more on those two elements?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, as the CFO has pointed out, the issue is twofold. The first issue was with regards to the amendment to the payment schedule. Now, all payments or transfers which are subject to the Division of Revenue Act, the DORA Act, are stipulated to be paid in accordance with the payment schedule. Now, if you look up what the definition of a payment schedule is in DORA, it gives you the list of the municipalities as approved by National Treasury. So we receive the list from Treasury stipulating the amount that should be paid on a particular date. So if you also refer back to the DORA of 2010, which requires all payments or transfers to be made in accordance with their approved payment schedule, the department, as the CFO has rightfully pointed out, realized at the late stage that certain processes were not in place to be able to affect the payment on the specific date as required by the Act. They subsequently then applied for a withholding to Treasury, but before any department can withhold a transfer, there are certain requirements that you also need to be able to perform, like for example, informing the receiving national or the receiving officer to say, I am withholding the funds due to the following reason. And that needed to have been put in place before you can actually apply for withholding. So Treasury came back and said, we are not approving the withholding, so we advise you to pay effectively the transfer to the payment as soon as you possibly can, because you are now in non-compliance. And then if you further refer back to DORA of 2010, section 33.2, I think it is, it specifically states that any transfer or payment which is made in non-compliance with that act is then deemed as irregular. So the department then proceeded then to make the transfer, but they were already in non-compliance. So the act of non-compliance has been established, and then you effect the transfer in non-compliance, and that's the irregular of the 127 million. The other irregular expenditure of the approximate 19 million, the primary bank account issue, that basically originates from the fact that the department receives an approved set of primary bank accounts in which transfers should be effected into the to the municipalities. Banking detail schedule was submitted to the Office of the Accounting Officer by National Treasury. The exact date of the submission of the email with the attachment was on a Friday of 30 July 2010. And then the department then proceeded to do their normal processing to effect the payment. But the payments were only transferred and effected according to the best reports, which we do on the 4th and the 5th of August. So from our point of view, obviously, because we follow a risk-based audit approach, we highlighted to the department to say that there should have been a system in place to make sure that prior to the transfer being effected, that we ensure that it's made into the correct primary bank account. And at the end, basically, we're highlighting that risk that, you know, somewhere there should have been a monitoring to say that these accounts have been updated, and then the payment should have been effected into the correct updated bank account.
So the letter from Treasury went on the 13th of July.
30th.
And yet the payments were supposed to be effected on the 4th of August.
No change. Basically, the updated payment, not payment schedule, the updated primary bank account, that list was submitted on the 30th of July. And the department, you know, normally when you get to month end, then they do the normal processing by the first week of each month to affect those payments. And when they were doing that, those payments, they didn't factor into account the updated bank account details.
I think what I'm trying to establish is the reasonableness of the time between payments and submission of the amended banking details.
Bearing in mind that the 30th of July 2010 was, according to my understanding, I think if I recall correctly, was a Friday, but still we factored in mind, bearing in mind the weekend, and then also the 4th and the 5th, which were, I think, about the next week, Thursday and Friday. So we deemed it sufficient time to have at least been aware that there's been an update. That's why it's why we raised the fine. So also affected the mind. Okay.
The AG was satisfied with it. Are you satisfied with it?
Sorry, I don't remember. I don't understand, Ms. McGinn, what you mean with satisfied with.
You are talking about the 30th and then the 4th and the 5th. Which were supposed to be paid in, were you satisfied about it? You were not.
Ma'am, when you say satisfied, obviously we've raised the finding to say the DORA requires you to pay into the primary bank account as approved by National Treasury. The updated list was submitted and you did not pay into the updated list. And we're saying that if you look at the time span of when the updated list was received, and when those payments were affected, we deemed it sufficient time for the department to have gone back and updated those accounts to make sure that the funds are paid into the correct account. So that's why we raised the finding.
Chairperson, maybe through you. We've got people from Treasury. Okay. The next question on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Look, people incurred irregular expenditure of 24.2 million. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 2.1 million arising from the late payments of supplier invoices and taxes due to SARS. What I want to find out, what happened to those people and who was responsible for that? Name? And what happened to that person? Any legal action taken against him? Because I know there were interests now here. That was supposed to be paid by the department, and yet those were not your mistakes. Somebody was supposed to have done that before time.
Thanks, Honorable Member. The process towards investigations of those cases
has just started. We've been working with internal audit to check how far they have progressed. But maybe again the CFO will assist to provide more details for me.
Thanks, Chairperson. There are systems that are currently in place in dealing with these issues of wasteful and fraudulent expenditure. First of all, on discovery, what has happened here, we informed the relevant investigating officer who is doing his investigation, and we've got a loss control committee that look at these issues as to check whether there was negligence on the part of the officials to have caused that delay or with having us being charged interest. But what we have done, as the accounting officer is saying, is that all the findings related to irregular and fraudulent expenditure are now investigated by our internal audit unit, and it's at an advanced stage, and we will be taking their recommendations and implementing them accordingly. If there are officials who are found to be negligent, the monies will be recovered from them. If there are other disciplinary cases that we may have to follow, those will be followed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I think I'm next.
Okay.
Like
all right. Any follow-ups except to be done? Comrade Faith, Dr. Ravi, Dr. George. All right. Yeah. Faith.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on Note 28.2 on page 336 of the annual report. To follow up on the fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. I've seen in the document that they've given us, they are saying the fraudulent and wasteful expenditure was of an unavoidable nature as it relates to the court ruling on the legal case that the department was defending, which requires the department to pay interest. Then I'm interested in this explanation. What is unavoidable, and then the department was required to pay interest. How does it come? I think I need a further explanation in that regard. Also, Chairperson, on note
27.1. No. Let's deal with that question first. Then you will then proceed with the next question.
Yeah, no. I want to me.
See, I've responded to your question, short and pointed. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, Honourable Member, for the question. The process on legal cases is always unpredictable in that you normally budget a figure for legal cases at the beginning of the financial year. But the expenditure is dictated by the number of cases that you receive in a particular year. So on this matter, we've always incurred over expenditure in that we could not forecast how the legal proceedings will unfold and what the final expenditure will be on a particular case. So cases drag depending on the procedures of the court, which is something that is really out of the control of the department.
Yeah, Chair, I would like to follow up on that because you are not the only department that has got legal cases. And like you are saying, when you budget, I think the answer, you're not the only department. Why are these other departments not experiencing the same thing? Is the skill that lacks in the department? Or what happened? Because like I'm saying, if it is the your legal attorneys, you know the fees that they charge. I understand the issue of the portfolio management and other things, but the answer is it leaves much to be desired. Nevertheless, Chairperson, let me move to the next one.
Before we move to the next one, no, I think the explanation is not good enough. I think it relates to planning. For planning, in terms of your budgeting for contingent liabilities, how you plan for that determines at the end whether you have shortfalls or not. So I don't think it has to do with the unpredictability. And this 336,000, is that just interest or it is cost plus interest?
Thanks, Sebastian. If I may add to what the accounting officer said.
No, I'm asking a question.
Okay, it is interest.
Just interest?
Yes.
How many cases are involved?
It's one case.
Just one case?
Yes, Sebastian. Can you allow me to elaborate why we had to pay it?
No, you had to pay it. I mean, it's interest. Maybe if you were to elaborate why. How long did it take you to find that it accumulated this amount of interest? And what was the actual amount?
Chairperson, this was a procurement-related case where the supervisors took us to court and were the defendants. And at the end of all the court processes, we lost the case, and the ruling of the court was that we paid this person what he sued us for plus interest, calculated from the date that he would have received the money. And that's why we're saying it was unavoidable. It was a court order that we pay the service provider.
So what happened to the officials who awarded that tender irregularly that led to the department losing in court? Who are the officials?
Yes, Chairperson, this and all other matters that need investigation are under investigation within the department. And once we get the report from the investigators with their recommendation, appropriate actions will be taken against those who are found to be transgressors of this particular matter, including the recovery of the money, if that is the recommendation of the investigator. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, Chair. I think CFO and accounting officers are not telling the truth here. Because the truth of the matter, Chair, is the reason why court decided against them, it was based on the content of the agreement that they were presenting in case trying to move on. Therefore, that person who misled the department to go to court and try to defend undefendable issue is the person we are talking about here to say, who is this person who misled the department until you go to court hoping you have got something out of what he has, told you. We wanted to know this person. That's the person we are asking about.
His identity or her identity cannot be the product of an ongoing investigation. Because when you went to court, it was on the basis of tender number 15 of 2009. You surely know who are the officials who are involved, because I'm sure when you were preparing your legal argument, they had to be called in to come and explain how they gave the tender, what were the processes, why did they deviate from normal tender process? So you can't say we're still investigating. And so the simple response would be, well, we're not doing anything about it. I'm sure that would be a more honest response. Because we're investigating is a good cover for anything that there is no action, we're investigating. So mean, this one specifically, there is no specific action that has been taken or is being taken against officials who are responsible for this tender that we lost in court.
That person, we acknowledge that. I stated earlier that we just resuscitated the process of ensuring that internal audit investigates all the cases as reflected in the annual report for the period under review.
Ah, okay. All right. No. We need to make a follow-up on this one. All right. Yeah,
okay, Chair. Let's go to 27.2. Page 172. This is a follow-up on the question that Honorable Mangena has raised. You see, they said on 27.2, non-compliance with procurement policy, investigation is still taking place. It's around 271 million. Chair, the management of the department, I believe they have received this report. They were aware of this as at the 31st of March 2011. And now we are told that the Internal Audit Committee is still investigating. This is a clear case of irregular expenditure. I don't know how long, the turnaround time. How long does it take the department to investigate a pure, clear matter like this one? Can they now currently update us on the status quo of this matter? Who was responsible? What actions have they taken? What have they done to recover this huge amount of money?
Because very interestingly, the very question we're dealing with in terms of your presentation, you say it was unavoidable, which means there is no case against anybody on the matter. So it was unavoidable. No one is to blame. Anyway, it will be lost in court. But let's talk to this one, 27.2. Here in April or May, when you wrote this report, or in August, you were saying investigation still taking place. Where are we now in February 2012?
So just to go back to the unavoidable, what was unavoidable is the court ruling and the payment, not the process towards the officials involved. On all the cases of irregular expenditure relating to the report under revision, I've indicated that is the process that is just resuscitated recently, not with the audit committee, honorable member, with the audit unit of the department, because they usually help us to investigate cases of irregular expenditure.
When is this? So that we can have some sense.
Okay, Chairperson, this is better to come to the commencement of the investigation. If I may answer your question directly, I think with the capacity that the internal audit has, they started around about September. But what we have done to ensure, because there are no, as we speak now, the chairperson of the audit committee is here. At lower levels, we don't have people who are doing the actual audit in the department. So as a result of that, and seeing that this investigation is going to take longer than we expected, because our intention was that before we finalize or close this financial year, these issues must have been resolved. That was action taken, whether we condone or we take action against officials. Then the department decided to get assistance from outside, and we appointed a service provider who is now capacitating or closing the gap that we identified within our internal audit. And that company started on Monday. I had a meeting with them. I briefed them with what they need to do, the priorities that they need to do is to these audit findings. I think you need to close, and the timelines are what we have given them 6 weeks to conclude the investigation and come up with their recommendation for the accounting of such consideration. Thanks, Chairman.
Who is this service provider?
It's a local company.
KPMG, whatever, I mean, give us their name.
No, no, unfortunately, it's not enough to suggest. Mr. Kaban,
give us the name.
It's SB,
SABNT.
SABT, yeah. It's a local company, but it's headed by quite qualified people.
No, no, it's fine. It doesn't, it's just a consulting company. It doesn't matter. Now, your internal audit started investigating in September. And then on Monday, you engaged SABNT. Now, are you suggesting that since September, of all the cases that they're investigating, they did not even conclude one or two or ten or five, so that you're able to say, we have been investigating. Out of these 300 cases so far, 15 was concluded. They've finished them, and this is the report they've given to us. I want to hear from you, CFO, before I give the chair of the audit committee. Because to just say, we are investigating, and I underline your words with the capacity that they have. You were in a very coded way trying to say they have no capacity.
Yes, Chairperson. I must first of all, before the internal can actually start the investigation, but I must answer your question directly that there are cases that have been concluded. And there are sort of 15 or so, but which are more to do with non-compliance of blockchain management, the tax clearance certificate. It's about 2.2 million.
Look, should have said, to make it easy for us, volunteer information. Our internal audit has been investigating 317 cases. Out of those, 19 have been concluded. These are the recommendations. These are the steps that we're taking. These other 298 is still in process. So we have a sense, but just to make a generic statement, we're investigating.
Okay, Jefferson, thank you very much. The cases that are linked to this irregular business expenditure is 200 cases, that is transactions that are involved. Out of that, 20 have been completed, and they are amounting to about 2.2 million. And the submission from the investigators was submitted to the accounting officer late last year for him to make final decision, to apply his mandate on the recommendation and make final decision. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. Then, on the appointment of the new accounting officer, that matter has been resubmitted to her to finalize those 20 cases. The 180 cases are the ones that, including the ones for the Treasury, which is two cases, those ones are the fraud we didn't investigate it because we thought it was a straightforward thing, we took it straight to the Treasury. But the non-compliance to the supply chain management, those are the ones that have been investigated, 180, and of course cases for that.
That's better. Yes, ma'am, wanted to enlighten us.
Yes, Chairperson. Perhaps to try and assist maybe the committee and maybe...
Please assist us.
That's why you're here.
Yes.
So don't try to assist
What you're actually asking is at the crux of some of the concerns we also have in the committee. And in trying to share the information I'm going to share, it will, I hope, assist the department as well in what I'm going to respond. The internal audit unit that is being referred to a lot in what the CFO speaks to, it's a very small unit in size. When you speak of this internal audit unit, you're speaking of actually a unit that has got one CAE, one chief director. You are speaking of two chief directors. At the moment, that chief director position is vacant. At the moment, there's two chief director positions. So when you're speaking of these investigations that are currently underway, you're looking at, if you look at 2009 and 10, there's a backlog of 60,945 volumes and in terms of rand value. But the records that we get presented in terms of the committee when we have meetings, it's about 3 or 4 pages in terms of line items. So it's a lot of records in terms of the cases that this unit must investigate. So I'm trying to give the committee some context of the number of the cases that this committee is busy investigating. Now, added to this 60495, then you have 2010-11 471 in terms of rand value, which is another volume in terms of line items, which adds on to this backlog already that this small unit, internal audit, must be capacitated to add on onto this already 4 or 5 pages worth of work that was already a backlog. Now, bearing in mind that this is not their key focus area in terms of investigation, from our expectation and what the PFMA expects them to do, we are expecting assurance that the control environment is sound. So now there's always this dichotomy that internal audit is supposed to give assurance that the control environment is sound. Yet, we have this challenge that there is a big irregular expenditure challenge that this department is facing, which internal audit should also assist the department to clear. Now, the service provider has recently been contracted to assist the department with this irregular expenditure as one of the key focus areas to address. You may have read in our report as the audit committee that we are citing the delays it takes for the things to get done in the department. So this is the backdrop against which the internal audit unit within the department is operating. So I'm just sharing this, hoping it assists the committee to understand the environment within which the internal audit is working, so that when the CFO is trying to perhaps explain why this hasn't cleared thus far, it contextualizes the explanation better, I hope.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. It's a follow-up to my question. I would like to indicate that the responses given, they are not satisfactory. You see, Chairperson, I believe the department has got a disciplinary code and procedure that prescribes what needs to be done in case of misconduct. These are clear cases of a regular expenditure, and you are able to even make a breakdown to say, this is a regular extension of contracts. This is an adequate motivation for deviation for SCM processes. 3 quotations were not received. And then I don't see any sense why should you cause the matter to be investigated, whereas there are clear evidence. You could have as well proceeded with the disciplinary code and procedure. Secondly, it's the question of the appetite also to comply, also to discipline. Because you see, it's like this service provider that you are referring to, he was only appointed on Monday because he knew he was going to appear here today. I mean, the turnaround time in dealing with matters of this, I didn't hear the proper response to that effect. Again, coming to the audit committee, to the chairperson of the audit committee, yes, you have reported in your report that you had frustrations. Then the question that comes now is, what were you doing during your time? Quarterly, when you come across this, what did you do? Did you bring this to the accounting officer's attention, failing which you know they are political heads? Did you bring it to their attention? Those are the questions that I'm placing here.
To the Not really. Maybe the chair of the audit committee could talk to the last part in terms of, you know, your quarterly meetings,
certainly, we did bring it to the attention of the DGs, both. We have many meetings with them. As far as the political head, we attempted many times to have meetings with the political head, the then Minister Shikwega. We were never able to have a meeting with him. He never honored any of our meetings with the acting Minister Mtetwa. We were in the process of getting meetings. The accounting officer present can attest to that. We were in the process of getting meetings. Each time we would have the meeting, it would be cancelled. Each time we would try to get a meeting, it would be rescheduled. So we are in the process of getting the meetings as we speak. So, but we have scheduled quarterly meetings with the accounting officer. They are scheduled ongoing. But with the political head, not at this point, no.
Maybe that's true, so that we, maybe I allow Hosh, because I don't know what his angle was going to be. He feels that his area of focus is being encroached upon. So that's fine. I would, Dr. George and Singh, I would give Hoshi to ask on his focus area, and when it's done, then we'll allow members to make follow-ups on any of the issues that would have been raised and any other issue that might not have been raised. And then, I'll... Can we do that? After Hoshi, I'll give members the opportunity to ask questions. Dr. Ravi, is that okay? Okay, sure.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe the best is to say no further questions so that it goes through.
It can be.
let's start, Chair, with a statement by an accounting officer for traditional assets. Page 16, three bulletins. Sure, in that particular.
Wait, page 16.
Yes, in that particular.
Wait, page 16.
It's 16. Page 16 is after 15, before 17.
Oh, all right.
Okay. The bulletin 2, 3, 4. I would want to hear whether it was just a statement or how far have they gone in dealing with those areas, because they've got direct implications on the area that I'm going to deal with it of non-compliance chapters. Develop, review, monitoring, and so on. Can the DG deal with that part of three bulletin?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The three bullets is the one that starts with to develop, review, monitor, and implement legislation and policies relevant to traditional leadership. Okay, let me start with that first one. Our mandate as traditional affairs is to review, to monitor, and implement legislation. And you might be aware by now that we've got the National Traditional Affairs Bill, which has been extensively consulted upon in terms of the stakeholders. It has not yet come to Parliament. And I think we're consolidating the two pieces of legislation, the National House of Traditional Leaders Act of 2009, as well as the Framework Act of 2003 into one. So that's the first bullet. And the second one, to coordinate and monitor the review and implementation of legislation policies relevant to traditional affairs by national and provincial government departments. There's been a lot of work in this area that we've been doing. For example, the initiation legislation, the discussion document on Utwala, and so on. So there's been some work in this area as well. I need Chairperson to also indicate that the Department of Traditional Affairs started to be functional in January 2011. Between 2010, October, and And on November and December, I was employing staff. January, I was orientating them, you know, about what the mandate is all about and so on. So I can confirm that a lot of work in the two areas has been done. The third one, to build capacity and capability of the institution. We visited 8 provinces, consulting all stakeholders in terms of the assessment of the state of governance within the traditional institutions. We got feedback from all those stakeholders. There are 7 high-level things that have been lifted from that consultative process. And we're working, we've finalized the report, we've finalized the implementation plan for capacity building in this regard as well. So, in a way of explaining the 3 bullets, I think that's
Yeah, I'm sure the DG is aware that as a department they are failing to do simple things. That he's saying they are going to do implementation of legislation. One, Traditional Leadership Framework Act. It calls you to establish councils of traditional leaders across South Africa. Where are you? If you are talking about implementation. The very same piece of legislation spoke about the category of traditional leadership. You can't have categories that you are becoming white elephant. You are unable to remunerate them. There are traditional leaders in those categories that you don't pay them. What are the reasons for not implementing? Because when you are saying implementing, monitoring, you are referring to that. What is the status? Why are you not doing exactly what you are? Because this is your way. It's not my way. You are saying you are going to do that. Why are you not doing what you are saying you are going to?
Well, I would want us to. I thought that was introductory. Out.
That's it. But I'm not satisfied with the response, and I should spot areas that I'm not satisfied on them. I wanted him to talk to specific implementation.
All right.
He was, you know, emphasizing on review. You can't review before you implement and fail. You must implement and say, here are problems. So you start by reviewing something that you are still having it with dust, you have never implemented. What is that?
All right. DG?
I want to deal with the 3 areas. We are indeed implementing, and we have got proof of the implementation. For example, number one, establishment of the councils. The outstanding councils that need to be established. The president, the honorable president of the country, announced the recognition of kings in July 2010. And in terms of the Framework Act, it says that 1 year after that, we have to establish the King's Councils. And as we speak, we are finalizing the process of consulting the Kings so that we establish the King's Councils. The Kings have been consulted. The Acting Minister invited all the Kings. They've been consulted in this matter. And so on. So there is a formula that the minister is going to come up with which deals with this matter. So we don't just come up with a formula without consulting and so on. So we are in the process of finalizing the formula so that we can be able to consult the kings. The category of traditional leaders, we have the following categories. We have the kings at the top, and followed by the principal traditional leaders.
No, it's fine. You wrote the category.
Okay. And then in terms of the non-payment of certain categories of traditional leaders, we are not responsible for the payment of traditional leaders. The Territory Commission is responsible to make recommendations after investigation, you know, on these matters, because traditional leaders are public office bearers. Now, as far as the headmen and headwomen are concerned, a recommendation has been forwarded to the president. And there is no determination that has been made so far. There are also challenges with regard to that. and the minister is in the process of investigating, you know, putting a team to look into this matter. The challenges are as follows. May I just highlight one or two? The challenges are as follows. The recommendation by the Security Commission to Honorable President are saying that in terms of the head men and head women, there's got to be capping of 71,000 rand for, but the provinces are told to come up with their own determination in terms of the scope of work of different traditional leaders. Now, as a Department of Traditional Affairs, we're concerned about inconsistencies if it is left in the hands of different provinces. That is why the minister is putting up a committee that is going to look at that so that there is uniformity, so that we can expedite this matter. The recommendation has been made by the Security Commission. The Honorable President has not determined. So there is some work that is being done in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to
thanks,
thank
you very much. Non-compliance, particularly supply chain management, Chairperson. Can you share with us what is the problem with your department failing to follow the supply chain management as it's required? I'm sure you are aware that simple, you know, compliance things you are not doing with, you're not complying with. You fail to provide Parliament within a specified date of 10 days, of course, to provide them with the documents you were supposed to. What are the challenges that are causing you not to comply?
Thanks to Honourable Member. On the late submission of the previous annual performance plan, which I guess is the document the Member is referring to that was submitted late to Parliament, it was affected by the transition that and the changes that were going on in the department at the time. The absence of senior managers in positions affected the on-time development of strategic plans of the department. There was no program at the time.
I can't. Oh, stop there. I'm not going to allow things that are not going to take us anywhere. The HOD, the accounting officer, is fully aware that in terms of Public Finance Management Act, you are the main person. If there's no systems, if senior water views are not in offices, it becomes the responsibility of that office. Can you tell why this was not followed? Don't tell me something. I'm not interested in stories. I'm interested in real issues. Why the accounting officer failed to do the work?
Chairperson, I appreciate the role of the accounting officer. The reality is that the only person who was in the permanent structure of the department at the time was the accounting officer, who is not here. So I'm only able to respond on the basis of the information that I have as to why the accounting officer couldn't develop the annual performance plan on time. With your respect, Chairperson, I'm not in a position to respond to that.
I'm sure this chair brought the main question that members were asking at the beginning, to say it becomes very difficult to deal with this kind of scenario. When you look at these documents, you will see heads of not more than four people, the minister, the deputy minister, the two DGs. And it means this book in totality, these people must master it, must own it, must be able to answer without, you know, saying, unfortunately, it was on Monday, it was in the morning. Now it means I cannot even, you know, pursue this question anymore. Because he said, I cannot talk, on behalf of the DG. He understood the question that I'm saying. The buck stopped with the DG.
These other people are there to help you to do the work. And that if they don't do, they don't do the helping, to ensure that they fail to, you'll then say, I've charged this person because of failure to do 1, 2, 3, 4. Failure to charge, it means you need to be charged, you yourself, by the minister. I don't know, Chair, maybe you have got a different understanding.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Conceptually and legally, you're correct. I wanted to move to the next question. We are caught up in the very question we started with at the beginning. Because, unfortunately, in this committee, we're not asking general questions. We're being very specific and looking for accountability on the action or non-action of individuals assigned to particular positions within the department. Now, when you bring it to that level and seeking to understand the motives on action or non-action of an individual assigned to a specific position, sometimes can create challenges. Like Mr. Africa was in charge there, and the PTV, the minister, even if he was here, he was not the same person. If he was, then our focus would be on him, because he has the ultimate political responsibility for the department. So the comrade is correct to raise the question the way he does, because we are not generic. But I equally appreciate the predicament of the accounting officer as she's sitting there now, that Mr. Africa is not here. And the political head who should have acted against him is also not here. Even if Baloyi was here, he was not there. So I'm just saying we were caught up in that predicament we started with at the beginning on that specific question.
They are interrelated, Chair, all of my questions. They would want this kind of, you know, interrogation, this kind of, you know, expected answers from, you know, the DG. They are related, my questions, are not far from one another. Maybe you may elevate the debate to say, maybe Director General, Professor Muel may speak to this thing. He might.
Why he?
Yeah, well, that's good. Thanks for that. So can you take it to that level? And then here, if even himself, when he was with Africa, were not able to deal with this kind of thing, to say, Imran, we have got a responsibility here. We are failing. What do we do?
Is there any light you can shed to this, Professor Moyen, in terms of the failure? Although, you know, it goes back to what the DG was saying, that the only person who had a permanent position in the department, because remember, it is the cooperative governance branch of the department that is in charge. And in that branch, it was Elroy Africa who was permanent. The rest were all displaced. So I'm reluctantly looking towards Professor Moyen to check, just in case there might have been discussions around some of these anomalies in the department during the Cultural Revolution, to check what was happening. What happened?
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Before I give to the acting DG.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I would say also say that I was not there myself, because this is 2009-2010.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I should buy your proposal to say at our own interval, let's come to the determination. Because this kind of frustration, Chairperson, it's handicapping our work. We are unable to do, you know, the expectations of the Parliament and the people of South Africa. We sit here and confronted with the officials that are unable,
either technically or by you know, self-made. We need to look at it and seriously have a strategic session on this matter. And then, as such, I'm closing my chapter of questions. You can pass to other members.
Well, I'm happy that this is the scope of hearing. Otherwise, after Khosh, we'll just all go home. Okay, Dr. George, you hear the question, then sing, and then, okay, just to you, and then.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah.
For cooperative governance, it was partially answered about the internal audit committee, but there was mentioned that there was an audit action plan that was reactive and happened afterwards. But my question was, is there a robust internal audit process? And the response that I heard from you, ma'am, was that there seems to be problems in that particular committee. What I would like to know is, clearly there's something going on, badly going on here for this internal audit committee. When will it be working properly? Because it's obviously one of the structural problems that you have.
Thanks, and thanks to the honourable member. I'm going to request the chairperson to come in, but my understanding and having attended the meetings myself is that there is an established internal audit committee. It meets regularly. The concern or the response that the CFO was referring to earlier had to do with the capacity of the internal audit unit, not necessarily the committee, but I'll ask the chairperson to assist.
Thanks. Honourable members, yes, the audit committee, which is the external audit structure which we belong to, formed by external members, which I belong to, I'm not part of the department, that is fully functional. We are members from outside. That is fully functional. What is not fully functional is the internal audit unit, which is the key component that should be fully functional to assist the department to pick up all the internal control deficiencies. If you read the report by the Auditor General, it refers a lot to the internal control environment that is not as how it should be. And the greatest weapon to that is the internal audit unit of the Department of Corporate Governance. And we are referring to that. When I'm saying we, me included, we are referring to the capacitation of that internal audit unit, starting by the head of the unit to the unit itself being capacitated. That's what we are referring to the internal audit unit of the corporate department.
So just correct me then if I'm wrong. I understand how the structure works, but I can't see how the audit committee can work properly without this piece of the organization feeding information to it, because your function as the external audit committee is as a handbrake so that when the things start falling over, you can do something or you can raise the red flag and whatever, do the necessary. But that isn't working. And so the whole thing can't work. So if you don't have a functional department that is giving you sensible information, you're wasting your time, frankly.
I fully concur with you. It is one of the serious issues we have raised with the DG, hence we have been wanting a meeting with the minister to want his political intervention. But in our meetings with the DG and the interventions we have put in the department to strengthen the internal audit. It is precisely for that reason that we feel hamstrung if the internal audit is not capacitated and working functionally as it should.
Then, what you said earlier on about your committee is functional and working, I understand you're having your meetings, but you know, I can't see any purpose of them because they clearly can't do anything, clearly because you don't have the information you need, and so people are being paid for that. But anyway, I'll leave that now because I get it, and it's obviously something that needs to be fixed. And then I had a question about the restructure. The people that were displaced, which is very odd, I think, but anyway, is this displacement now resolved? So is the structure restructured done, and are the people properly in place? And then can we look forward to some kind of improvement the next time we're here?
Honourable Member, the problem is partly addressed. There is some progress. Just to relate to the earlier question, the annual performance plan of the department in the previous year was submitted on time. We are on course for the current and for the next financial year to submit it on time. The remaining issue or the outstanding issue is that we have, unfortunately, some of the senior managers who were appointed additional to the establishment as a result of this. So that's the issue we're addressing now, and the current minister has made it his priority to ensure that those people are ultimately placed permanently in the structure of the department. They are being utilized
ultimately
elsewhere.
Ultimately placed or displaced as well?
Ultimately placed, Chairperson. We are aligning the structure of the department. We're not displacing people. We are aligning the structure of the department with the purpose to appoint these people in permanent position and take them out of the additional list.
What is the additional list?
In public service, if I'm appointed in the permanent structure of public service, and it happens that there's some rearrangement that maybe leads to my position either being rearranged and structured differently, and maybe for some reasons I may not have the necessary competencies to fit in the reorganized position, it gets advertised, they bring in another person. I then get appointed to the additional establishment, a long public service thing. So we have a pool of senior managers who are appointed additional to the establishment as a result of the restructuring. So it is that group that in the current process we are trying to bring back. Since the displacement, they've remained there, but you can't take them out of the system because they were appointed legitimately in terms of the previous process. So we are trying to appoint them back into the structure of the department.
Going back to where we were, all those who were appointed during the Cultural Revolution, we're reversing everything. All right?
I have one final question.
Your final question, seeing and then.
But I want to preface that question by just saying that it's now 10 to 11 and the minister still isn't here. I think it was mentioned also by the External Audit Committee was that they seem to be operating in a political vacuum. And it is clear that there is some heated views about the inability of the department to function. But if it is operating in an environment of political vacuum, then it is very difficult for it to function. So we can scream and shout and gnash our teeth at the department, but if they actually don't have any direction, then how else are they going to function? So that clearly is an environmental factor that needs to be taken up by the minister. So what I was hearing, I won't ask the question, was that you are operating without having a meeting with the minister. Therefore, you really are operating in a vacuum. And that is exceptionally difficult to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
No response to that one. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to follow on Dr. George. Yesterday it was about internal controls of the department, and I think that was the basic fault of the department, which gave rise to irregular expenditure and all other kinds of contraventions. Now, to the chairperson of the audit committee, through you, Chair, on a rating of 1 to 10, 10 being excellent and 1 being hopeless, you can use 0 if you want, how would you rate internal control systems in addition to internal audit within the department itself? What rating would you give it, internal controls and risk management?
Possibly I would use a 2.
Thank you, Chair. 2 out of 10 is hopelessly failed. So that's the basic thing.
But I would want to qualify why I would just leave it at a 2 for now. 2, through you, Chair, if you may allow me. There is a lot that still needs to be built at this point. The kind of that 400 and I think it's 86 million is the, if I quote the figure for irregular expenditure, the absence of processes in place to identify irregular expenditure is but one of the control deficiencies that are put in place. For us as a committee, the internal audit unit that is not operational, to quantify the impact of that on its own is another concern for us that is yet to be quantified and be put on in financial terms. Because this is what was quantified and put in financial terms in the financial statements. So we are saying the impact of that is not translated in the financial statements. Hence, I would rank it low. But I'm not saying all hope is lost. Maybe I'm a very conservative scorer, but I'm just saying I'll rank it very low because of the internal audit unit that it's just not functional.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's taken 17 years of the existence, 18 years, give them benefit of the doubt, 17 years of the existence of the department to reach 2. Maybe it will take another 70 years to get an 8 or something. Not in our lifetime, but that's a matter of serious concern. Chairperson, I have a few questions.
Yeah, maybe before you move on, because I think if you recall yesterday our engagement, and I think even with our briefing with the issues of internal control are very central. If they are not fixed, we can talk about all these other high-flying things. I mean, if you have transactions that are awaiting condonation in 1 year, 419 million, in just 1 year, we have transactions that are dodgy to that amount. The previous year it was 52 million. That still weighs, analysis and waiting for condemnation. So you basically have 471 million, almost half a billion of transactions. I think we might be heading down the same road as Public Works in terms of the gravity of the situation. I think it is a point that does need to be flat out. It can't be. It can't. So it means people do whatever they want to do and then account later. They affect transactions, and then thereafter, then you come around and say, fine, let's have a look at what you did. Is this important or not? I don't know.
Thank you, Chairperson. And just like in Public Works has overall responsibility for many activities around the country, so does this department. This department is a mother department of municipalities. And Chairperson, if you read what the former minister has said in his foreword on page 5, he says one of the key of the annual report, right at the bottom, one of the key focal areas for COPTA is the improvement of financial and administrative capability of municipalities. Now, if you need to improve their financial capability and administrative ability, I mean, it's got to start at the top. But having said that, Chair, the bulk, 99% of this department's budget is transfers and subsidies. So sometimes what happens is fiscal dumping, because they give money to municipalities, conditional grants, municipal infrastructure grants, etc., etc. And those facts and figures are reflected on the annual report on pages 28 and 31, where it says so. What I'd like to know is the investigation by the Auditor General and the audit. To what extent does either the AG or the department have oversight over funding that you grant to municipalities? Conditional grants, MIG, etc., etc. Because that is where the bulk of your money goes out of the voted funds to you. What kind of controls exist at municipal level to ensure that those monies are being properly spent? And I ask this advisedly, Chairperson, because I have experiences of wastage of money at that level. But here is the mother department. You are responsible. You transfer. Can you tell us what kind of controls exist before I ask the next question?
Thanks for the question. I'm going to request that the CFO and other colleagues here who deal directly with the management of the
process. I thought there was someone here who deals with
the DORA process. Then they help the CFO to respond to the question, because the function is managed at the land function level. The CFO's office deals just with the transfers.
But whoever manages it at that level has accountability to a higher office, and the highest being the district office.
Correct, Chair. Ultimate responsibility resides there.
Yeah, well, I think, well, who amongst the officials here deals with the DORA matter?
Chairperson, they are mandated by the accounting officer. Yes, as a department, we have got dual responsibility when it comes to the management of the transfer payments. As correctly, the Honourable Member is saying, they made up 99% of our budget. And in this, we work with the National Treasury in terms of monitoring the expenditure. From our side as a department, what we do transfer money in terms of the agreed payment schedules. But before we do that, there is a unit in our IGR branch which monitors the expenditure on
who is leading that branch?
Mr. Sigidi and Mr. Hans are here, and those are the the kid is not here.
Who is here? Yeah, the kid is not here. Who is here?
Mr. Hansley is here.
Yeah, can you talk to the question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Slight correction. My branch is only responsible for the municipal infrastructure grant portion of the DORA, not the normal transfer payments. Thank you, Chair.
No, it's fine. Let's talk to the municipal infrastructure grant. How do you interact with the municipalities? How do you monitor its expenditure beyond the transfer?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, again, the municipal infrastructure grant, the management of the grant itself is split across three branches within the department. My particular branch only deals with the planning component of the municipal infrastructure grant when municipalities apply for projects to be funded. It does not deal with the monitoring and compliance afterwards. That would be in Mr. Sakiri's plans. That's my understanding. Thank you, Chair.
Why is Mr. Sakiri not here? Is there any explanation?
Chairperson, unfortunately, he has a family bereavement.
Chairperson, I think we need to pursue this matter because 43 billion is transferred out of this one department to municipalities. Other departments transfer hundreds of billions more. And I think maybe we need to look at how we get a comprehensive audit of those funds being utilized at municipal level. But that's something that we can discuss at our committee level. Because service delivery protests, et cetera, take place at that level. And the money is coming from here. And if the money goes from here, then accountability starts here at national department. But Chair, the next question I want to ask is it in the 2010, in the year under review, 2010-11, that it was alleged that the former minister, and now given the time or removed by the president, allegedly spent monies on some activities which were outside of what were voted for? And is there any investigation by the department of those amounts that were spent? Because it is the department's vote. Let's just get a response to that, sir.
Chairperson, thanks. The CFO will confirm this, but the issues around the minister who has since been released happened during the 2011-12 financial year. The findings of the Public Protector's Office were finalized towards the end of last year. So the matter is going to perhaps appear in the next financial year, in the next annual report.
Yeah, but the question is, having received the report, whether in October or in September last year, since then till now, is there anything that the department has done about it, or they didn't anything? Find that by the time of the next report, you will be able to tell us this is what we did or this is what we did not do.
This is from the
question. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, indeed, we interacted with AG during the investigation, provided him with all the information. And finally, a report with the proper recommendations was submitted to the President and finally got to the Department. And we looked at the recommendations, and on the basis of that, we drew up a plan as to how we're going to respond or undertake or implement the recommendation of the Public Protector. I must say that one of the recommendations was the recovery of the amount spent, which is about 600,000, and on the plan itself was submitted to the Public Protector. She accepted it, and we are currently implementing the plan, including the recovery of the amount mentioned there.
CFO, I mean, when you say we are implementing the recommendation, including the recovery, let's say, what's the word? Look, it does not tell us much. I would be happy to say we're implementing the recommendations on the recovery. This is what we've done. We've written a letter to the man concerned, or the minister has had this communication. This is what has happened. So we're able to have a sense that indeed this is what is happening. Otherwise, we're implementing the recommendations and leaving it at that. I think
the main recommendation is the recovery of the amount.
Sure.
And on that one, we've written to the minister to inform him of our intentions or to provide him with the options to pay the money back to the government. And so far, we have not received the response from him. We have written to him, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And the second one was about the internal control environment within the department, which
which you are attending as part of the normal processes that were implemented. And that is as far as you are concerned.
All right.
Okay. That's fine.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of reporting in this annual report here, there's conditional...
Yeah, is that your last question?
Last of the last. In terms of reporting, I'd just like to know from the department, when they record percentages of unspent by municipalities on conditional grants, and they reflected you on pages 200 and something, about 15 pages of a list of grants, and they say unspent so much. Now, have they taken into consideration the fact that the municipal financial year ends in June and yours ends in March? What kind of coming together is that? Do these percentages reflect your March financial year end or the municipal financial year end? Because there has been conflict where municipalities say, no, we've spent all the money, all we've got until June. What are you doing to reconcile? And my last question will be, Chair, with regard to SAUGA. There were issues around the South African Local Government Association. You also give them money with regard to uncollected fees from KwaZulu-Natal on Aloga. How far have you proceeded with that matter to reconcile those issues? Thank you, Chair. That's my last question.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let us start with SAUGA. And this one is subject to correction because it's based on my last interaction with them when they were looking for additional funds from the department. One of the reasons that they were forwarding to us was that their membership has dropped. Oh, it's exactly. And because KZN then took a decision not to be part of SAUGA. But what has happened lately is that decision by the KZN has been rescinded and they are now part of SAUGA, so they will be expected to contribute as members of SAUGA in terms of their revenue. When it comes to reconciliation or how we explain the expenditure by municipality here, it's always a problem when we do the final reporting. And it's something that was taken up with Treasury as to how I was supposed to conduct this report. But what appears here is our own, what we have transferred to them at the end of the financial year and what they have spent at that particular time. It is recorded as such, but it's always an argument for municipalities to say, well, at the end of March, we're at this point and not at your point. But as I say, the steering committee between ourselves and the department made a copy of the IGM that ourselves of finance and the treasurer are working on this to find out whether we can be able to come to a common understanding a way how we report on these issues. And thanks, Chairman.
All right, Commander Roy.
I want to answer the question that Mr. Singh has already touched on, so I hope I'm not, and he didn't get an answer. But let me try, maybe I'll get an answer. It concerns the apparent under expenditure of municipal capital budgets. Please, if you can make some kind of comment. You see, in Mpumalanga today, yesterday, the day before yesterday, most of this week, there have been service delivery protests. They're protesting about a lack of amanzi. They're protesting over ugas, ama toilets. They're protesting over roads. This chair is capital expenditure. Now, do you agree with the South African Federation of Civil Engineering Contractors, SAFCEC, and the Consulting Engineers South Africa, CISA, that municipalities have underspent over the last financial year, underspent 12.4 billion rands of capital expenditure? 29.3% of the capital budget not spent. That is why we have service delivery protests. Do you agree with the figures? Can you make a comment? Mr. Singh is concerned about controls over the money you transfer. Good. I'm also concerned about controls. What about active intervention, that the money you transfer is spent and spent properly? Please make a comment. Finally, let's just take Mpumalanga as an example. Yeah, let's look here. Let's quickly look at Mpumalanga. You didn't get answers about I don't have my proper glasses on. About municipal systems improvement grants, maybe we'll get answers now.
If you look at page 191, when it comes to municipal systems improvement grants in Mpumalanga, where they are busy protesting now, this week, day after day, unless I'm misreading this, they've only spent 21% of the funds allocated. If you look at municipal infrastructure grant on page 213, I think it is, that again only spent absolute minimum 20 or 30% of their budget. I think 48% of their budget, a bit higher. But nonetheless, under 50% of their budget spent on municipal infrastructure grants. And that is why we're having coaches. So in addition to controlling these amounts that you transfer, what active interventions have you got to ensure people spend the money quickly, effectively, and properly?
So I'm going to request that the CFO responds to the first question, and then on the second question relating to MIG, Mr. Hansi, if you can come in because it deals with the current intervention. Thanks.
Thanks, Jefferson. I correctly agree with you that the other expenditure within municipalities. In fact, before the final figures were introduced by the municipality at the end of June, with pressure during the meeting that we were having with them, they were projecting that the infrastructure and the expenditure within municipalities was going to be around 20%. So I quite agree with you. And it's something that we are not happy with, and as I said earlier, it's something that...
It's not your job to be unhappy or unhappy. It's your job to take action. That's your department, that's your role. That is the collective leadership over there. That is your responsibility. What action are you taking? What are you doing to assist municipalities to spend the money properly?
Okay, I'll leave that, Mr. Hansley, to leading that branch. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the question. Yes, it is indeed a very serious concern. Some of the interventions, and we agree with more or less some of the figures there, although we have to verify that I don't have the specific report available as to the capital expenditure levels of municipalities, but it is a big concern. Chairperson, some of the interventions include that, you know, over the past year and a half, the department has worked on establishing what we call a municipal infrastructure support agency, MISA. It will be a government component. Essentially, it's taking over the Sienza Manju project that was run by the DBSA, where we've deployed technical capacity at municipal level to assist municipalities, firstly, with appropriate planning for municipal infrastructure and capital projects. I think that is the first step that needs to be taken. And MISA is geared for that. At the moment, there are 88 engineers being deployed across the country for that specific purpose. Secondly, if the planning is correct, it is about the execution. MISA deployees will stay with those municipalities to assist them to execute and project manage these projects properly. But we also found that contract management is a problem at that level. And that is also part of their specific role. Chairperson, then, you know, in addition to that, we are also putting in place monitoring and evaluation mechanisms to ensure that the money is spent on the purpose it is intended for. And I think that partially touches on the earlier issue of whether we know where big money is flowing to and what municipalities are doing with this. Part of this is a big audit that the department is busy with putting together at the moment. To go and verify whether some of these projects actually exist. Many municipalities report on big expenditure, then the expenditure has went into operational expenditure, like salaries, instead of the actual projects for which they were intended for. In addition to that, we are taking a holistic view on financial management as a department. That is not within my branch, but we also need to ensure that procurement processes are followed, but that there's also efficiency in procurement. And the colleagues within the Intergovernmental Relations branch, Mr. Zagidi's branch, they are looking at some of those interventions. And there are also other colleagues within the department assisting municipalities with that. But Chairperson, we also need to ensure that there is grant coordination between the different departments. We are sitting with a municipal infrastructure grant, but there are many other grants with other departments. And we need to ensure that they start talking to one another, because the disjointedness doesn't help municipalities with implementing projects effectively and to the scale required. And that is why we don't see the type of impact that we would like to see at the local level. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, really the bottom line is, yes, we transfer huge sums of money to municipalities, but up until now, we have no effective way of monitoring whether this money is being spent or not, where it's being spent, how it's being spent. That's the bottom line. Yes, we have plans going forward. Well, let's see what happens this time next year, see whether those plans have been effective or not.
I think the main challenge is, the department wants to monitor, you know, what happens with the money sent to municipalities in terms of procurement processes. But in 1 year, you are sitting here with 419 million worth of procurement that are deviant from your supply chain management. You want municipalities to have clean audits by 2014, but this department has a qualification. You want to strengthen systems, this and that, but you hardly have a functional internal audit unit. So I'm just saying, you know, you are challenged to get your house in order and do things right, so that when you go out there to the municipalities, you yourselves are able to talk to what you can do. Don't ask municipality to do what you can't do yourself as a department.
Chair, I'd like to follow up on that response.
Let me give, pardon me, I'll give you and then to Dr. Rabi.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I had 10 questions, but they've all been answered. I think next time we'll use the alphabet and I'll be B.
All right. No, that's fine. There will be restrictions in terms of the number of questions. Dr. Ravi?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think we have a department which is in a profound crisis at the moment, and I think one of the reasons for this is that there is a lack of strong political leadership in this department. Chairman, I really think that the Minister of Public Works that came yesterday really created a very good impression. But Chairman, with respect, I think it is extremely important. It's not fair to cross-question officials here, because what we need at the moment here, and the Deputy Minister or the Minister, I think, could have taken the time to appear in front of this committee. And I'd like to note this. This is not really... we cannot exercise our role of oversight if the political office bearers of state do not attend this. Seen in the light that only 60 local authorities receive clean audits out of 285. And the fact is that the DG that presided or something like that, in the report towards this particular committee, the scoper said that not, and with due respect, I think the sooner we get the house in order, the copter gets the house in order, at present they're not complying with the PFMA. Chairman, if you do not comply with the PFMA, you're bound to have problems within your particular department. And I think the sooner that they put their, focus their attention on complying with the PFMA, the better. But Chairman, I'd like to get back to the Ministerial Infrastructure Grants. I think the official over there said that there's a question of turf. There's a lack of rapport between local government and provincial and national government. But Chair, this is not, with due respect, this doesn't hold water. I think that the national minister should interfere and tell these people to get their acts together and to get the show on the road, because at the moment, service delivery is one of the great hindrances towards orderly government and so forth. And I'd like to know from the official then, are there any plans afoot to try and streamline the rapport between the particular three departments, local, provincial, and national government? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the question. Indeed, the Minister is busy with the program. He's just finalized the program to meet with his provincial counterparts, the MECs for local government, but also to go on a roadshow through the country under the banner of the local government turnaround strategy to ensure that we pick up on the core elements of turning local government around again. The Minister has already met with some of the MECs, notably MEC Bradal in the Western Cape, for example, last week he met, exactly to speak to the principles of cooperative governance and good intergovernmental relations. And at the core of this, the Minister is placing access to basic services.
See, the problem that we have is, you know, to talk to these issues as if government only sprung up in September last year. What are we building on for the past 17 years? So we always start from zero. I think I hear what you're saying, and there's nothing wrong with that program and the intentions, but I'm saying it's 18 years. I think that's the frustration that we get from this side. The acting DG will say, I'm in office for 2 weeks, and this is what I'm going to do. It's fine, go ahead, as a person. But as an institution, this department has been there for the past 18 years. So, yeah. Let me allow Sal to ask, and then I'll give you things. Welcome, Comrade Minister. I'm sure there should be space this side. All the accused are sitting this side. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for being late. I've got another appointment which I hope the Secretary told you about. But there's something I like to know, Chair, because COPTA is one of the most important departments, local government departments. I like to know, maybe I was here, but if the ANC is already asked and answer, it's fine. The MIC funds, I like to know, is it ring fence for a specific project? And the other thing I like to know is the internal audit, which it's going through the district municipalities to the local municipalities. How is the outcome, and how deal the senior management with the outcome of the internal audit? Because I know at the time when I was at the municipality, every month for 3 weeks there was internal audit, a person who done the internal audit at the municipality. The other thing is because I like to know, like Comrade Roy said, there's a province who's fighting over water, all the service delivery things. We've got the same problem in our it's not our, it's an international problem now in St. Bakes Flay. It was all of the news focus and all this. There was nothing water for the whole month of December. And there was a truck coming once a day to deliver water. And every time you phone to the provincial office, they said they can use the NIC funds, but we must give, you must ask the minister to give a go ahead to use that NIC funds to give water to the person. So for me, I like to know about the NIC funds. Is it a ring fence for a specific project or what?
All right, maybe the issue of the MIG funds. The other person you raised, I think, had been raised before and had been responded to. The gentleman over there did indicate that part of the problem with municipalities is that in the MIG fund gets to be used for other things other than what it has been meant for by municipality. But I'm sure DG, acting DG or CFO or the gentleman over there, MIG funds, when people have no water, can it be used for that?
Yeah, person, I'm going to propose that he proceeds to give responses on MIG.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, indeed, DG is ring-fenced, and there's a particular formula. And essentially, at the heart of MIG is that municipalities need to plan in advance for their projects, and based on their allocation as per the equitable share, they are allowed to submit projects within that allocation to the department, and then we will consider it according to the projects. For situations where water is required immediately, it is actually the sector department water affairs that deals with that through their funding mechanisms. But MIG is not that flexible, and I think that is part of the problem that we're sitting with in South Africa, is that we need a dedicated fund to respond to immediate requests like that, because they do arise more frequently, and that is a trend that we're starting to pick up. But also, just to indicate, Chairperson, when it comes to the spending of MIG itself, it is not that we don't have systems in place to monitor MIG expenditure, but because municipalities have to report on that expenditure, it is just a question of the physical verification of all MIG projects that we need to attend to, and we need to ensure that we improve the monitoring of that. It is actually the physical project that we need to go and witness and see ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow on Mr. Hansby's earlier response, and having due regard that, you know, your financial year end is June and March, so the percentages would not be correct. But the statement that it's because of a lack of capacity, and we're putting engineers and consultants and everybody else in these municipalities. But if you really look at these tables that have been provided here, and that's why I want Mr. Ainsley to take this up in his constituency, you see that a municipality like Etegwini, which was allocated 595 million, spent 38%. And you can't tell me they don't have capacity. Msunduzi spent 18%. Kwatuguza, I think Honorable Ainsley is familiar with that, spent 25%. So, Chair, it's not a question of capacity. You know, the rural municipalities have spent 100%. So something else is wrong. And these are conditional grants, and that needs to be investigated.
Can you, those are the only municipalities you checked. Can you
lots of
go
examples.
To Mpumalanga?
I wanted to check Mpumalanga, but I thought you
okay.
would check it.
Fine, just check in the meantime. Comrade Nyalung.
Thank you, Chair. My question
I just want to check on the issue of traditional counselors. If my memory serves me well, I think from 2008 they were busy talking about the employment of the traditional counselors. Are they still going to employ these people, or what's going on there? I just want to get this clarity there. If they are going to employ them, when are they going to start employing them? Thank you.
All right. That being the last question, I will be your other person. Comrade Roy, you have a question? Comrade Roy? All right. So, Prof, just pass that question. We'll answer it last. If there is Dr. George?
I have a question for the minister. Can I ask him that now or later?
Ask me. I will assess it and pass it to you.
Okay, this is a question. Minister, the internal audit department is not functional, and this prevents the audit committee from properly doing its work. They are waiting for a meeting with you. When will it be held? Thank you.
No, that's fine. Comrade Minister, well, it's a pity that you were not here throughout, but as you know, when you were here in your previous life, you know the process. We'll allow you at the end to talk to some of the pertinent issues. And what you have raised is an issue that we discussed earlier. But I'm sure I'll try and raise a few those that I think are pertinent. So it will be responded to. Comrade Roy? As we...
I have to have one brief, very final last question.
Sure.
If the acting DG would please turn to page 159 of the annual report. I want an explanation as to why there's been a very dramatic increase in the use of consultants. So we asked that question and I popped out for a while. A dramatic, huge increase in consultants and outsourced services from 49 million to well over 248 million in the current financial year. Could you please give some kind of justification for that? Given the fact that you've got a fairly comprehensive and full staff complement yourselves, why do you find it necessary, therefore, to externalize so many of your operations, to outsource them to consultants? Have you got the page? 159. It's a dramatic, it's not just a slight increase. Now, that isn't up to much, but it's about six times an increase.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson and Honorable Member. What happened at the time is that the community work program was transferred to the department, and while the establishment process was underway, the work, and I think my colleague referred to it when he mentioned the number of engineers that were appointed in different municipalities to assist. These business and advisory services people were then appointed to assist municipalities with the work that the colleague referred to earlier. That was the problem.
So the engineers that he referred to, those are consultants. They are not departmental employees.
So can I ask the colleague maybe just to...
To add to what you're cutting for, is saying, during this financial year, the community works program was transferred from the presidency to the department. And as part of the transfer, they gave us the service providers that they were using in the presidency to us. And for those, as part of the package, they were being paid project management fees, which here they are classified as consultants.
is something that came to the department in April 2010, and it's the first time the expenditure. That's why it's not a normal departmental increase in consultancy fees. It was a new project, CWP, which even now we have engaged, but we have appointed new service providers, but we still pay them consultancy fees. But it's part of the CWP package, as we receive it from the person structured like that, and we'll continue as that. Then the MISAWA is only starting in this financial year because we received the funding in 2010-11 financial year. 2011, yeah, 2010-11. Okay, all right, thanks.
Want to make some addition?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just to indicate, these service providers are actually NGOs because part of the objectives of the community work program is to strengthen the NGO sector. So they're not like normal service providers.
NGO, run by engineers.
Actually, Chair, they are not. There's a distinction between what we referred to earlier with the engineers, where we place them in municipalities. That relates more to the Sienza Manji program, which was run by the DBSA, and those people have been taken up into MISA. CWP is for the community work programs, the community work.
Okay. Useful
next annual report, this is a huge sum of money, to have a better breakdown of how the money is being spent on who and for what purpose. Because you're talking about NGOs, you're talking about engineers. I would like to know what NGOs. I'd like to know what the engineers are doing, because here it says advisory. Do you have engineers sitting in the office advising you or working in the field on fixing pumps and pipes? So really, Chair, it's a big expenditure. If we're going to stay on your books and stay at this level, I think next time around we want a clearer and more comprehensive explanation of what it's being spent for what purpose, on whom.
Can we get that breakdown? What's today? Wednesday? Next week? Wednesday? A week?
Okay, sir.
It's okay.
If that's the instruction, but I was going to request that you give us some more time.
What will be more time?
2 weeks, sir.
All right. 2 weeks? That's it. That's fine. If you can do it earlier than 2 weeks, like say Monday, fine. But if it's 2 weeks, still okay.
Sir, the same thing too. The consultants that they are talking about, I understand what they are saying to us. But what I wanted to find out from them is, are they not using consultants like other departments where they say they call them to come and train them and do this and this, and they keep on doing the same thing? Because what you believe is that when consultants are coming to train us, by the time they leave, we should be well-skilled in whatever they're training us. Are we not talking about such consultants? Thank you.
I think maybe let's await the breakdown that they will be sending us in 2 weeks. Because on page 159, it says business and advisory services, and then it gives the amount of 234 million. All right, maybe let's get, Prof, can you talk to that question so that we then...
Yes, Honourable Chair. The Honourable Member, I wonder what the question was, because it was like traditional councils, when are they going to be employed? Perhaps you talked about...
When are they going to be operational?
Okay, because at the moment, they are in the process of being reconstituted. And when they get reconstituted, they are aligned to the Framework Act. And when they are aligned, they are changed from being traditional authorities to traditional councils. And when they are transformed that way, that way the gender parity, one third of the people that must be elected must be women.
Not less than.
And then also they have to be ordinary members of the community, not only the royal families. And so when they are reconstituted. And we are in the process of a formula. The former minister had come up with a gazetted formula for the reconstitution process. and then at the moment, all the provinces are expected to start with that process. And when they've done that, they'll be able to have new members, to elect the new members that will serve at the national level, at the National House of Traditional Leaders, when they're reconstituted. And the two provinces like Free State and Eastern Cape do not have local houses because they have not reconstituted. So that process the minister is attending to, so that it is finalized.
Okay. All right. I want us to close. Comrade Sal?
It's not a question, Chair. It's just a comment. Honorable Joseph asked the minister when he got a meeting with the staff. I don't know. But I would suggest to the minister, he must ask his staff, the senior staff appointment with the meeting. Local government is for me the most, it's very near to my heart, especially if you go home and there's nothing water, or you go home, you can't go to the ladies. So what will it be when the minister decided 1 month, all of the staff, none of them are not getting the salary? So for me to work in COCTA is a decision, it's a conscious decision. You have to do something for someone. So if you go home and you know someone has called through the day, there's no water, there's no electricity, how do you feel as a person? Because for me, it's really, you must feel good to do something to someone. And it's not the senior staff, but the senior staff at the head office. It's right from the head office to local government. And I really, so if I got a telephone number of the minister and asked, minister, he has no water for 3 days in this town, there's someone who you will refer me to, phone that one, and maybe that one's phone is off. So my plea is, in that meeting, please ask the staff, how did it feel to go home at exactly 4 o'clock and there's a queue in the office, people waiting for someone to see? Because I know most of the officers,
yeah,
when it's 4 o'clock,
come, cut it down. Yeah.
Yes, sir. But for me, it's a conscious thing to work at local government. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, Comrade Minister, welcome. We're happy to have you here with us. We were told about your earlier commitments. Now, there are a few, well, of course, we spent the whole morning talking to a whole range of issues arising out of this report. And I'm sure you would appreciate the anomaly that the department is at the forefront of pushing municipalities to, you know, to be clean, and yet we are sitting here with a department that has challenges. So that's the starting point. But there are a few issues to which it might be important for us to get some form of response and commitment from your office, or perspective. Let me say perspective, so I don't call it, not necessarily commitment. I think the first and foremost thing that as a committee, we always expect in departments, that the political leadership should actually give support to the management of the department to act with firmness and decisiveness to ensure that there is compliance with laws and regulations. So you don't have officials fearing to act or when acting, feeling they are on their own. You know, because at the end of the day, accountability to Parliament is political, and you are the political head. It's still very fresh to some of my colleagues who went to Denmark 2 weeks ago on study tour. Accountability to Parliament, both administrative and political, to the minister. When they appear before the Public Accounts Committee, officials keep quiet. It's the minister who talks, because that's where the accountability lies. So we might not be there yet. Of course, the Public Accounts Committee was established in 1850. So they've had all these years to develop up to where they are. And even the Auditor General, they rely on the work of the internal audit. It doesn't go and do full-scale audit, because the strong internal audit can rely on their work. Whereas we're still, you know, on the opposite side. So political leadership is key, especially if you have a situation like this. The second area of concern for us ministers is the administrative leadership. There has been no stability in the department. It was a challenge to talk to the accounting officer. I mean, she has only been there for 2 weeks, and she must tell us why the patient died. We're not interested in what it is that's going to be done in the next 2 months. Our work is review. Review is about looking back. We have the portfolio committee and the standing commission appropriations that we deal with, you know, the forward-looking things. We are looking backwards by our very nature. So we're bound to ask questions about why did this happen? Why did the accounting officer of senior management not do this? So if you find that you have new people, then the engagement becomes very, very difficult to manage. So stability and the need to ensure that we have a permanent DG sooner than later. It will be interesting to, it will be good to know when is that going to be attended to. How soon can we expect to have a permanent DG and all the senior posts being filled by permanent people, so that there is no leadership vacuum? We were very worried, and I think your previous life would actually have assisted you to have a best eye view of the entire system. It's 18 years down the line, but it's almost like we're starting from scratch all the time. I was talking about what appears to have been a departmental cultural revolution, with, you know, the displacement of people, deconstruction totally, and you know, starting from zero, and all this and all that, whose impact is what has brought us here. And to say no, we would want to get some sense around that. But thirdly, it's the issues around internal controls. Because for us in financial management, unless we deal with internal control, every other thing else is meaningless. Every other thing is meaningless. You see, comrade, in 1 year, there are transactions worth 490 million that are suspect, that are irregular. In 1 year, 490 million rands worth of transactions. It tells you that it was just laser fed. People can act and account later. It just cannot be. And what is the cause? The internal audit function of the department hardly exists. So how do we ensure that this is capacitated as quickly as yesterday, so that because even the way that it is doing of investigating the irregular expenditure, that's just but a bit of their total scope. So if they are bogged down on these, by the time they finish them, they'll find another pile of regular expenditures waiting for them. So that's a key element. But also we're concerned that the audit committee, it appears that in the past until now, there have been very limited, if no interaction with the executive authority, which for me I think is very limiting to the political leadership. In as much as it is there to assist and advise management, but if you check the annual reports of many departments, you find that one complaint of the audit committee is lack of responsiveness to the recommendations that they put forth. And we have argued before National Treasurer that we want it to be institutionalized, that the report of the audit committee must also go to the minister, so that he knows what the audit committee is reporting to management, so that when there are problems, the minister doesn't say, I don't know, I've never heard about this. So we think it's another issue that requires urgent attention. Fourthly, it is the issue around the management of the municipal infrastructure grant, because it constitutes the bulk, this transfer actually constitutes the bulk of the budget of the department. And if the bulk of the money in the hands of the department is transferred, and once transferred, there is no proper, there are no proper systems to monitor and manage, that's what leads to me being used to pay salaries, gala dinners, and all sorts of things that are not supposed to happen because there are no proper systems of. And we know the management of DORA in all dispensing departments has been a problem. Others even felt once we have transferred the money, it's none of our business. For those people to account, I've given the money away, not my business. It cannot be the correct attitude. And the last one, which was raised, it was the issues around the investigation by the public protector and the recommendations arising out of it. We wanted to know how is the department implementing those recommendations. Yes, we got a response, but you see, typical of an environment where you have problems of leadership and its coherence, it's almost like all things are starting. We're starting the process, but we'll be interested to find out how we're implementing the recommendations of the public protector relating to the process, since it involved departmental monies that were used, and it was sort of found out that there might have been some irregularities and some recommendations around that, you know, that because after all, these are public money. The other issues that were raised, well, allowed Congress to do so, but they were not strictly within the ambit of our annual report in terms of the financials and the report of the Auditor General relating to the portfolio run by Professor Wayne, well, the policy level and the financial level. I'm sure these matters can be pursued beyond this meeting, not strictly within this conference. So I think from our side, by and large, those were the issues, because they relate to financial management and not to the broad spectrum of the departmental responsibility. So we'll give you some time, a little time, to talk to these issues. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks to honourable members. Of course, as you have indicated, thanks. My apology, as indicated, that a commitment to the cabinet. I fully agree, Chair, that my interpretation of political accountability to Parliament is exactly as you have indicated. That's why I raised to the team yesterday as they were leading themselves to finally to come and appear. I then said, you know, I'm supposed to be leading you in there to deal with this issue. That was when I was dealing with some internal technical challenges. I fully agree. The question about the functionality of the internal audit, and in particular reference to a meeting that is outstanding with the minister. Chair, when you come in, inherit, you do that lock, stock and barrel. I can't say that there has been no attempt to have these meetings going, because these meetings are supposed to be there. It's regulated that these meetings are supposed to be there. Part of it, of course, is part of the history of the portfolio. The other part is the current situation. I was talking to Chair of Audit that we need to arrange that such meetings, because I was saying meeting with Minister Wu, and by that time I realized that, you know, I look at Minister in terms of a person and not in terms of a position. So I realized before answering that, no, I should not be coming to talk here as a person, but I must be talking for that position that I occupy, because although one did not have the advantage for handover board, but one, of course, he was supposed to have been brought to the know that there has been this anomalies. Take my commitment, Chairperson, that this will be attended to. We will give priority to that. It's quarterly meeting. We will have standing dates for meetings for the year. But that's how we can actually deal with these issues. The second issue, Chair, is the cleaner, not clean. Operation clean audit. How do you get municipalities to be clean on financial management when the coordinating a department is not that clean? Fully agree. That's the question I raised, and the answer I got resulted in me deciding what I'm going to report and request later on as to how we deal with this whole question. Because there is this idiomatic expression of charity beginning at home. We need to make sure that it is actualized. I'm ready, Chair, to provide a political support to officials. Ready to do that. So if there is any official who at some stage will say he or she can't take decisions that are supposed to be taken legally for fear of the minister's interference or whatever, that person will then have herself maybe to first indicate what would be that. Take it from me, Chair, and members, that we will provide that support. We will lead and will provide support. The issue of administrative leadership, the question of stability, I fully agree with the observation of the committee. And that would actually talk to why, because of this stability, why I decided to intervene in a particular manner that I'm going to talk to as I conclude my input. We are working very hard that we have a permanent DG soon. In fact, if it was all about my liking, I would have had a DG, even if it means a week after the former DG had resigned. But it's difficult to attract. You know, there is a process to do that. You can look at existing directors general to want to strengthen. But, you know, you have a situation where sometimes, because of development, you get stigma attached to portfolios. That it becomes difficult and to say, hey, should I want to be there? Am I not going to be, you know, tainted, have my career polluted? But the closing date for the advert is the 3rd of March. That was the closing date. My target is that having to do the necessary competency tests and the like, one would like to approach cabinet and have this finalized, if it's possible, by the end of March, so that we then are sure that there is stability. You need to actually stabilize it. But talking about stability, Chair, I'm sure the acting DG and the DG of Traditional Affairs might have shared with the committee that, as you have indicated, about all senior posts that have to be filled. You know, some there are quite a lot of what you can refer to as double parking. Because at some stage, a restructuring was done, where some senior officials had to jump out of their positions, but remain in the department. And others got appointed. So when you talk of stability and filling of posts, there is a challenge, and that's why I'm taking the kind of approach that I'm going to report, to talk to at the close of the comment. The issue of about 490 million, which is suspect, I think we're looking at those issues. Whether when it comes to MIG funds, the spending part of it, in any institution, in any portfolio, in any department like cooperative governance, that through which you find these transfers taking place, you can't afford to behave like a robot, because a robot does not join the vehicles when they pass there to their destination. When it's green, they pass. Whether it's a vehicle of a thief going to practice his or her professional act there, the robot operates. We can't operate like that. At the moment, as we speak, Chair, you don't have a dedicated monitoring mechanism. You also have some financial activities in operating like in a decentralized way. We need to actually deal with these things. I'm quite aware I've got a plan. In as far as the public protector's recommendations, two things about it. When I was in my previous life, the report of the public protector was referred to me to deal with the same issue. When I was to attend to that issue, I moved to the office. Now, then the second issue is that the DG as the accounting officer had to manage that. We're actually in discussion in terms of expediting the implementation. unfortunately, the DG himself had to leave. So we're attending to that, reminding my, engaging with my colleague, the Minister of Public Service, for professional advice, because on issues like that, you need the Minister of Public Service and Administration to attend. But on the part within the COGSA, we are working on that issue. My apology, Chair, if it would have appeared that my team said when we are here and the issue is to focus on a review of the year, a particular year, we can only focus on questions related to that. When we are here, if an opportunity we have, we actually may have to respond to other all questions irrespective of whether they fall within or outside the year of focus. So, but that is the position in as far as that is concerned. Now, what is it that we are then doing? In order to deal with issues of senior officials, in order to deal with key questions that we have to perform, I mean, in areas where we have to perform as a department, I have started a process of aligning the department with the key responsibilities, so that when you then see a management of MIG funds, you are not going to operate like a robot. You need to develop interest in terms of what the money is actually spent for. That's what we need to do. And given the situation structurally, there is just no way, unless you do a little bit of alignment, there is just no way you can deal with those issues. I have dedicated the services of one of the people who are providing advisory to make sure that this person commands expert knowledge on financial management, so that you initiate the process, you look at what actually has to be done, because we want to be sure ourselves as to when are we going to be ready. If you then say municipalities be clean on financial management, you might find some municipalities that are led by people who read the Bible. They will refer you to a section in the Bible and say, why do you think there is just a drop of an obstacle in my eye when there's a log in yours? Now, before they ask us those questions, we need to get ourselves, to get our house in order. If I may submit, Chair, is to them say, we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to SCOPA, to them say, how are we raising ourselves to go forward in terms of dealing with these things? If I may request that in your busy schedule, we be given space before the end of March to come and talk to structures, I mean to the process of taking ourselves forward in terms of raising ourselves to be equal to what it takes to be a department of cooperative governance. So that we look at this, at all these issues and then say, what is it? Like, I mean, if you have information that no MIG funds are spent for something else, it means that we know. If I was sitting on that side, say, I'll then say, can you give us as a portfolio how much is spent on something that is not related to the expenditure area of MIG? And tell us which municipalities, tell us what has been done. Now, in terms of getting ourselves ready, we'll then deal with these things. I had an exercise, if I may share, Chair, like this. I had more questions that the answers, you realize that you will either get them next time if they are there. And I then said, look, And some of the answers like saying, no, the MIG fund is spent on issues that are not related to that. These are the type of questions that people will answer only if they believe that there's no tomorrow. Because if they believe that there is tomorrow, and tomorrow you may want to then recall all those municipalities, like you see, there are some ways, some responses that are easy escapes, lack of capacity. How do you unpack it? So these are some of the things that we need to actually look at. One answer likely it was not asked, but I think we can't in a democracy play hide and seek, because we will actually be putting ourselves in a position, actually in other words we'll be like sort of fooling the oversight authority, which is a problem. And I will hate to lead an institution that will actually think of doing that. Ask a question. Where does this underspending come from? Now it comes from personnel related who couldn't fill vacancies because of 1, 2, 3. How do you account to a situation where you say you have vacancies, but you have people who are double packed vacancies because the senior posts are not filled? But these people who are occupying these senior positions that are not filled, some of them, are the people who have been inside and who have been packed outside, but not outside the payroll. So there should be no financial implications arising from that. Now, I'm raising this chair to pay that there is room for improvement in that situation. And if we're to be given, like I've submitted, we will come and talk to the process. So that oversight, my understanding is that it's not necessarily like a policing mechanism. We can be assisted when we prepare, we present in terms of how we're taking the process forward. We have honorable members who have experience. We can be assisted with them to know if you go this route, you may not actually be there if you go that, because I know that it's not ambush tactics that guide the operations of leaders here. So, Chair, that's my humble submission. Taking full responsibility, there is nothing like the honeymoon period in politics. Get deployed today, you have to hit the ground running. Of course, it's your responsibility to check, because the ground that you hit running may also be running. So you need to check which direction it's running. It may be running to the same direction with you, but it may be running at a faster speed than you are. Whether it's faster or slower, you definitely fall. It may be running to the opposite direction. Also, so before you throw your pace, the first pace on the ground, you need to check which direction the ground is running to. I did that. Hence this alignment, hence this priority on financial management, hence this priority on oversight. Those are the things that we then see. Monitoring and evaluation, not oversight, because I might sound like, although we do have executive oversight authority, but clearly it's monitoring and evaluation. Corporate services, if we look at the alignment that I'm talking about, simple corporate services activities, it's all over in the department. So that's the situation, and my humble appeal. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Comrade Minister. I know that other life, you used to sit here and receive reports. So, but I must say that. Our engagement yesterday with the
Public Works, as well as today. Although there are issues and challenges that we're dealing with, I think one thing that is outstanding for me is the strength of, you know, the political leadership that comes through. I think that's very, very important. That's the most important thing, to get a sense that political leadership is indeed taking responsibility for the portfolio and leading in terms of getting things right and doing things right. I think, based on our future engagements, if that sense can become a trend, I think we'll be able to sort out a lot of. First of all, we will sort out all these issues that still afflict some of the government departments, and we can then be able to focus more on the service delivery issues and be enhancing the qualitative issues around the quality, the timeliness of services, and the ability to use the money we have for the right things, the right way, and all that. So we would like to thank you, comrade, for having made time, and in the short space of time that you came in after this report was produced, and still be able to talk to it and take responsibility and take ownership. I think there can't be anything better than that. And I have read your request. I'm sure we will be able to check if indeed we're able to find space. We would want to afford you that opportunity, because as you correctly pointed out, our objective, and I mentioned it at the beginning, is to exchange information and to be able to say from one side as well, how do we assist? Because ultimately we want to work ourselves out of a job as a committee, get everything so well and so right that there's no need for a public account committee. So it is in our interest as well to get things done the right way. Well, comrade, thanks, and to the Auditor General's office, we appreciate the assistance that you will give to us, the committee, and to the officials in the department. We are always happy to have you around. Thanks for being here. The acting DG, I said,